You're listening to On the Ward podcast. Stay tuned.
Hello guys, welcome back to another episode of the On the Ward podcast, and I'm your host, Reginald. So in this episode, Randy and I are going to be talking about gastric outlet obstruction. This is a follow-up to our previous episode on acute intestinal obstruction. Randy is ready. All right. So Randy, take us away.
My name is Randy and I'll be talking about gastric outlet obstruction. I have a sample question here. A 50-year-old man presents to the OPD with a 2-week history of effortless vomiting, which contained food eaten days previously. He has weight loss and pain in the epigastrium. The first question is, give the general term for this condition. The answer is gastric outlet obstruction. The best clue here is that there's effortless vomiting which contains food eaten days previously. We'll give explanations to some of the things stated in the question in the pathophysiology. So moving on to the pathophysiology, but then before that, I think you can give a brief explanation of or definition of gastric outlet obstruction. So I define it as obstruction of the stomach at the pylorus, or some sources say pyloroduodenal region, thus stopping onward flow of gastric contents. Gastric outlet obstruction could be caused by a number of things. We'll talk about them when we discuss the differential diagnosis, but the idea is that there has been a narrowing or a complete obstruction of the outlet of the stomach. So in the early days of the obstruction, the days when the obstruction isn't complete, it's not complete, that's when the narrowing is manageable. What happens is the stomach undergoes forceful contractions to force the food it contains down the pylorus through the duodenum and the rest of the GIT. Okay. But with further narrowing, the stomach is unable to completely empty its contents, and then this leads to accumulation of food and gastric contents, with resultant dilatation. Accumulation of food because the food isn't going down, and gastric contents because with every contraction, okay, there's release of enzymes as well as HCl, hydrochloric acid, into the lumen. So the accumulation leads to dilatation of the stomach. And another thing that happens is there's gastritis because this content stays in the stomach for longer and it irritates the walls of the stomach, leading to gastritis. And that can eventually affect gastric acid secretion by the stomach. Definitely, since food isn't going down, over time the patient becomes malnourished. And then another thing that happens is there's iron deficiency anemia. Mind you, the duodenum is the main site for absorption of iron. So if there's stenosis and food isn't getting there, there's reduced absorption of iron, and iron deficiency anemia can occur. But this only happens over quite a long period of GO. However, the most severe complications of gastric outlet obstruction are the metabolic derangements that occur. So per definition, we say it's a hyponatremic, hypokalemic, hypochloremic metabolic alkalosis. But how do we arrive at all these? So hypochloremia, because we are losing HCl, right? So we are losing chloride ions. And then alkalosis, because we are losing H plus by a number of mechanisms. We are losing H plus, and then that means the blood becomes more alkalotic because we've lost the balance. So initially, it's more of the hypochloremic metabolic alkalosis that exists. But what happens is in the bed of the body to overcome this alkalosis, what happens is it tries to eliminate the excess bicarbonate renally. And this bicarbonate is secreted or excreted alongside sodium. So over time, the person becomes hyponatremic and then more dehydrated. But then sodium, you know, is very necessary, especially with maintaining the blood pressure. Sodium pulls water with it, right? So the body does something to counter the dehydration. And then what it does is it rather excretes potassium and hydrogen, which are all singly charged cations, just like sodium. So it will rather excrete potassium and then hydrogen over sodium. So that explains the hypokalemic bit. And then there's also one thing called paradoxic aciduria. So though there's general alkalosis, eventually the urine is more acidic, which sort of beats your imagination. But then the explanation is because we've rather lost hydrogen. We are losing more hydrogen along the bicarbonates. Okay, the hydrogen that we are excreting over sodium. One last thing I'll add is if this dehydration and then metabolic derangement goes on for a longer time, the patient could present with shock, prerenal failure. So these are possible complications. Now to the differential diagnosis. Duodenal ulcers are a major cause. So there are many ways. It could be that there's a recurrent duodenal ulcer and there has been scarring. Okay. So that could lead to the stenosis of the pylorus. It could also be that it's an active duodenal ulcer. So because of the active inflammation, it's associated with edema. So edema from inflammation, and then there could be spasm. So pyloroduodenal spasm. So that's it for the duodenal ulcers. You may choose to separate them or take it as one differential. There's also carcinoma of the pyloric antrum, which is also a rising cause. Another differential could be carcinoma of the head of the pancreas. Carcinoma of the head of the pancreas. Because over here, it eventually leads to a blocking of the downward flow of food. Okay, so eventually, it's sort of some gastric outlet obstruction. Then there's chronic pancreatitis. There's also adult hypertrophic pyloric stenosis. And then there's also pre-pyloric gastric ulcers. That's to say gastric ulcers which are occurring just before the pylorus. So if it's over time, it could lead to cicatrization or edema if it's active. So I'll leave you to make your own order. But then for me, I would place the duodenal ulcer first, carcinoma of the pyloric antrum, carcinoma of the head of the pancreas, adult hypertrophic pyloric stenosis. So those are there. You can also separate the two I mentioned for the duodenal ulcer.
So I'm going to continue with how you'll be able to make a diagnosis of gastric outlet obstruction from your history and examination. So on taking your history, the patient may complain of copious and effortless vomiting. And the vomitus may contain food that has been eaten 1 to 3 days ago, and usually the vomitus does not contain bile. But if it happens to contain bile, then it's either the obstruction is partial and some amount of bile is able to mix with gastric contents, or the obstruction is actually an intestinal obstruction and not a gastric outlet obstruction. The next thing that you may pick up from your history is constipation. Which is invariable. It may be there or it might not be there. Because if the obstruction is partial, the patient will still be able to pass some flatus or feces. The next thing is epigastric pain. So this is also due to an active duodenal ulcer. If there's the cause of the gastric outlet obstruction is an active duodenal ulcer, and there may be some sort of epigastric pain. Also, you may also pick up some symptoms of iron deficiency anemia, such as tiredness, palpitations, pale skin, to help you in making a diagnosis of gastric outlet obstruction. So let's move on to the examination. So first off, you're going to do a general exam. When you do the general exam, you might pick up certain things. One of the most important things is that you might realize that the patient may be emaciated. The patient would have lost a lot of weight, especially if the gastric outlet obstruction is long-standing. There may be signs of dehydration, such as a dry tongue, dry inelastic skin, sunken eyes, tachycardia. Then also, you may pick up signs of iron deficiency anemia, such as chorionicia, which is the swelling of the nails, pallor in the mucous membranes, which all point to iron deficiency anemia. Then you move on to the most important part, which is your abdominal exam. So on abdominal examination, you realize that the stomach is distended and there's visible gastric peristalsis from the left hypochondrium to the right hypochondrium. So the buildup of gastric contents will just make the stomach distended, and the forceful contractions of the stomach to try and relieve the obstruction would make a visible gastric peristalsis to be seen on inspection. Then move on to palpation. So when you palpate the abdomen, you might feel a palpable mass. And if a palpable mass is felt, it's likely that the gastric outlet obstruction is due to a tumor. So you could have either a gastric tumor or carcinoma of the head of the pancreas. Any of them can cause this gastric outlet obstruction. On auscultation, you're going to hear a saccation splash. So saccation splash is basically that sloshing sound that is heard when fluid passes through a hollow viscous or a hollow object. So saccation just means to shake vigorously. So when you shake the abdomen vigorously and you listen with your stethoscope, you're going to hear this sound, like fluid passing through an object, like something like that. So we're going to move on to some investigations to help you make your diagnosis of gastric outlet obstruction. And we're going to start with diagnostic investigations, and then we're going to do the supportive investigations. So for diagnostic investigations, we have a plain x-ray of the abdomen. So when you do a plain x-ray of the abdomen, you're going to see a large gastric shadow and a large amount of gastric fluid. So realize that there's a large gastric shadow, the stomach is dilated, and that will help you pick up that there's been an obstruction somewhere around the pylorus of the stomach. You may also do a gastric aspiration, where a wide bore stomach tube is passed, and if you're able to aspirate about 400 milliliters of fluid, then you can make a presumptive diagnosis of gastric outlet obstruction. This is a presumptive diagnosis, so you should take note of that. Then also, you can do an upper GI endoscopy. So before you even do that, you have to do a gastric lavage to clear the stomach of all the contents there, so that you may be able to see with the endoscope clearly. With an upper GI endoscopy, you'll be able to pick up if there's a gastric tumor. You'll be able to pick it up and biopsy it later. Even if there's an active duodenal ulcer, you'll be able to see it as well. You can also do a barium meal. A barium meal will show a markedly dilated stomach with a lot of residue. And also, you might also see a filling defect around the pyloric antrum. So that's with the diagnostic investigation. For your supportive investigations, you can do a blood chemistry, like blood, urine, electrolytes. And this will help you notice the metabolic derangements, such as hyponatremia, hypochloremia, erased bicarbonate, hypokalemia. Also, you'll be able to pick iron deficiency anemia from your blood work. The hemoglobin may be low, your red cell distribution width may be low as well. So some of these things help you to gather everything and make a diagnosis of gastric outlet obstruction. So let's talk briefly about some treatment for gastric outlet obstruction. So before you do any definitive or operative treatment, first off, you have to do resuscitation, where the fluid and electrolyte deficiencies are corrected. In gastric outlet obstruction, you give saline and dextrose infusions. You never give Ringer's lactate, because Ringer's lactate has a high concentration of bicarbonate, and this may worsen the metabolic alkalosis, which is already ongoing. And you can also give potassium chloride when the urine output is at least 30 milliliters per hour. Then the serum, electrolytes, and blood urea are also monitored and checked daily. And if the hemoglobin levels are very low, you can do a blood transfusion to help correct that. So let's move on to the definitive treatment. So the definitive treatment depends on what is the cause of the gastric outlet obstruction. If the cause of the gastric outlet obstruction is due to a duodenal ulcer, you can give some proton pump inhibitors, or you can give some antibiotics to eradicate the H. pylori organism. You can do a conservative sort of treatment for a duodenal ulcer. But then if the gastric outlet obstruction is due to cicatrization or scar tissue formation, then of course you have to do an operative treatment. So there are several procedures that can be done, such as vagotomy plus gastrojejunostomy, a Bayrod 2 operation. And if it's due to a carcinoma of the pyloric antrum, we can do a radical R2 subtotal gastrectomy. We're not going to go into details with these things. Probably in a later date, we're going to talk about these things. So thank you very much for listening. Thanks for subscribing, liking, and sharing this podcast. Stay blessed.
Thanks for tuning into On the Ward podcast.